Well, you can see the prominent role outsiders play in this story. Let me just make a disclaimer before I begin talking some more about the Magi. I realize that I am breaking all kinds of Advent protocol by reading the story of the Magi during the Advent Christmas season. This is a passage, as some of you know, is almost always read for Epiphany, that season of the Christian year that is a couple weeks after Christmas. And in fact, the season Epiphany gets its name from the Magi, who have this epiphanal insight of seeing Jesus for who he really is. And so I realize I'm breaking all protocol there. But I do think it is a wonderful compliment and fits with the birth story that Matthew tells. And also I wanted to read it because it's about outsiders. And Magi aren't the only outsiders in the birth story of Jesus and the Christmas Epiphany Advent season. And I want to talk about some others before I talk about the Magi. First, this is a story about outsiders, and one of the outsiders are the shepherds. Rebecca kind of brought this out in her children's message. In Luke's gospel, that's the only other story of Jesus that has a birth of Jesus story in it. He doesn't have Magi, but he has shepherds. What we often forget is that shepherds were really, really low on the food chain of Bethlehem and Jerusalem society. I mean, they're just really, really riffraff is what they were. And weren't always taken seriously. And yet, they are the first to hear the good news of Jesus' birth. And they are the very first ones to see him. And now, you know, for the last two millennia, all those manger and creche scenes there with the baby and Mary and Joseph, there are the riffraff. You know, we put our decorations up this week. We got seven creche scenes. There they are, the shepherds in every one of them. And you can almost smell them, you know, right there. And you can almost smell them here, you know. So outsiders. Now, Matthew also has outsiders in his genealogy. Matthew, at the beginning of his gospel, just verses 1 through 17 in chapter 1, he talks about Jesus' ancestors. This was very common in the ancient Mideast to have a genealogy when a king or someone special was born. Luke has one too. Matthew does a couple things that are very interesting. He has five women that he names in his genealogy. You can read it for yourself. Do it later. It'll take you a minute. And he has five women, marries one of them, and then he has four other women. You know, scholars have done research on genealogies in the ancient Mideast. This is the only one. I haven't looked at this up in a long time, but I mean, well, 5 years or so. But when I look it up 5 years ago, Matthew is the only one that has women in a genealogy. Very interesting. And three of them are Gentiles. They're outsiders, and we think the fourth one may be too. We're not sure. And so they're not only women who are usually outside genealogy, they're Gentiles, they're outsiders. And three of them have very questionable sexual ethics. One was a prostitute. The other seduced her father-in-law. He had wronged her, and actually she was right in all that. It's a very interesting story. It's in Genesis 38. You can read that this afternoon too. And then another one had this proclivity for taking baths on her rooftop in full view of the city of Jerusalem. And so this is who's included in Jesus' family. So these are very much outsiders right there at the beginning in the genealogy. And then Matthew has the Magi, and they follow right after that. And the Magi, we get the name from the Greek word for magic. They were not magicians. We're quite sure they were astrologers. They read stars. That's right in the text itself. And we know that they were Gentiles because they don't know how to read the Bible. And they can't find a simple text about where this one is to be born. They come from the east, as Rebecca was telling us. Could be Persia or Arabia. We don't know how many of them there were. There could have been three, could have been four, could have been two. We do have three gifts, and that's where we get the idea of three kings or three magi, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And also they come up to 2 years after Jesus was born. They weren't there at the birth of Jesus. They were at his house. It's clear in the text. And it was a child with Mary. Joseph's not there. He's, working on his, in the shed, painting his garage or something. We don't know. And so it's just a little later. That's why we usually read the text after after Christmas. So the Magi. Well, let me tell you, though, about astrologers. There is no one who gets worse press in the Old Testament than astrologers. They are the creme de la creme of outsiders. They are lowlife of lowlifes. They are just the worst. And what does Matthew have them doing? He wants to make sure everybody hears this when he tells his story. They come and they pay, Matthew tells us, homage. And that's a word that can mean to serve or to bow down, sometimes to worship. Sometimes it's used to describe kissing or even kissing the earth, is that word. But in the New Testament, it is always this word. It was always, always, always used in reference to a divine object or being. It's always about worship and worship of God. So what is Matthew saying here? The very first people in the story of Jesus to bow down and worship him are the most distant outsiders you could imagine. I mean, are you getting this? This is a shocker every time I read this story. You know, the pastors aren't there. The adult Sunday school teachers from Bethany Presbyterian Church aren't there. It's not the local theological faculty at Bethlehem Pacific University that are there. No. It is the worst of the worst who are there. They can't even read the Bible. The Magi. And they're there. This story, it's incredible. And you can see how outsiders just have this huge role to play. And there's so many important things to notice in here. Let me just share a few theological observations or affirmations about this story. And one, we're already there, and I'm not going to talk very much about it. It's simply this, that this story reminds us that the gospel has this direction toward outsiders. It just does. All the way through, and it starts right here. You know, Matthew is the one who tells us at the end of his story, his gospel, it's Jesus who, Matthew's the one that tells us, Jesus said, go into all, what's the word, nations, ethne, people's group, go to all outsiders and tell them about me, that they might follow me. And it's those same ethne nations that are so vividly displayed at the very beginning of the story, this bookends of the outsiders in Jesus' story. And this birth story, this you know, Epiphany story reminds us of that. Secondly, I want to say that this story affirms that outsiders ask good questions and often have very good theological insights. Where is the one to be born king of the Jews? It's only the Magi that ask this question. Nobody else is asking it. They can't answer it, but they ask the question. And I think those of you who were not raised in the church or for whom church is new or has been, I got to tell you, I think when you're not inoculated to the faith like I was, you ask good questions. I mean, I ask good questions too. I just grow up, you know, loving Jesus all my life. But I think when you're an outsider, you can ask really good questions. I had a pastor friend of mine. He was telling me a few years ago about a Bible study he was leading, and there was this guy who was not one who was committed to Christ, but very interested. My friend called him a leaner, not a seeker. He was leaning into the Christian faith. I kind of like that. And this one guy, this leaner, in the middle of the Bible study, simply asked the question, who invented prayer? And my friend said, that's a great question. I think it is. And I would never ask that question. You know, but it's a fantastic question. Who invented prayer? You know, and an outsider would ask that question. And outsiders have great theological insight. You know, and I've shared this before about the influence of outsiders in my own life. My best friend, who's a pastor now, he was an outsider who came to faith in his 20s. The first time he ever went to church was when he was 18. First time he ever opened a Bible, he was 18 years old. I have so many friends who have mentored me, pastors, especially down in San Diego Presbytery, who had not grown up in the church. They were outsiders who then had asked good questions and then had great theological insight who shaped me. And then there's just a ton of theologians and Christian writers. St. Augustine, the great African theologian of the 4th century, was an outsider. You know, C.S. Lewis, he was an outsider. He asked good questions. In fact, I just brought some show and tell here just of the writers who were originally outsiders. And I just wanted to bring, here's my C.S. Lewis. And we balanced these pretty good at the first service almost. And and he was an outsider, came to faith. And I flunked show and tell in first grade. So here we go. Frederick Buechner. I bought my Buechner. And he's still alive, writing great stuff. And when he was a non-believer, agnostic, he was on the cover of Time magazine as a novelist. And then he was converted in a church after a sermon, actually. And his influence, a lot of people, influenced John Irving, who was a student and so on. And then Simone Weil, the Jewish woman who was part of the French resistance in World War II and later converted to Christ, though never baptized. Diane Kopp is someone else. She teaches at the University of, she's a pediatric oncologist at University of Yale Medical School, and after medical school was converted. And then Lauren Winter, Orthodox Jewish woman who now is an Episcopal priest, teaches at Duke. Anne Lamott, New York Times bestseller. She's Presbyterian. Kathleen Norris. These are good writers. Oh, and then I found out this week, I hadn't known this, as if this wasn't enough, but someone else who grew up very secular and wasn't converted until his adulthood was Jürgen Moltmann, and he's just retired at University of Tübingen in Germany. So I brought my Moltmann. I didn't even bring all my Moltmann, and there I haven't read him in a while, but he was big for me a number of years ago. And Moltmann, in fact, he was captured during World War II. He's part of the German army, and then he was by the British, and then he was later transferred to Great Britain, and it was there British chaplains told him about Jesus, and he read the Bible, and then he read Reinhold Niebuhr, the great American theologian, and it was the first theologian he read, and that was huge in shaping him in his conversion. I wanted to bring my Reinhold Niebuhr here, but Reinhold and H. Richard Niebuhr, one taught at, well, I don't need to say, and their sister Hulda, they were all these three siblings. Their dad was a pastor, so they grew up in the church. They don't count here. But it does show that even if you grow up in the church, you can ask good questions too and have insights, you know, even preacher's kids. But then, especially too, you grow up outside. That's my point. That's what's affirmed in this story. And I've seen it in my own life. Some of you who are leaners, you've asked me fantastic questions, and that I just want to honor those. And I think the Bible is honoring good questions right here. And also, I want to say that this story not only affirms that outsiders ask good questions and have theological insights, but this story reminds us that the gospel is about something radically new. Something has changed. The old rules of who's outside and inside don't necessarily apply. Jesus used to say, the first shall be last and the last shall be first. Barriers come down. Borders are crossed. Old wounds are healed. And it's not just tit for tat and the old give and take, you know, that we so much get caught up in, where you're outside and you're going to stay there. Kind of an interesting reminder of this is this story I heard about this softball league umpire in the off season was driving in Colorado, it's where he lived, and he was a little fast on the road and got pulled over by a cop. And he was trying to plead with the officer. He isn't as good as I would be about that, but anyway, he said, you know, hey, I'm in a hurry, I'm really a really, really good driver. And the officer wasn't going to buy it at all. And he said, tell it to the judge, and handed him the ticket. Well, a couple months later, the softball season started, and the very first game, the umpire was behind the plate. And the first batter to come up, guess who it was? It was this cop who had issued this ticket. And it was kind of an interesting moment, and the cop kind of said nervously, said, you know, so how did it go with that ticket? And the umpire, all he said was, better swing at everything. And that's how it is. I mean, we love that, but that, you know, it's kind of like you're outside and I'm here, and that's, it's so much a part of our world, just an old way of being, and no mercy, no grace, and you're outside. You know, think about who's outside in your life. Maybe someone that used to be inside, a former business partner or a family member. Don't miss the opportunity of this season. Christmas is about surprise. Something radically new is afoot. Dale Bruner, who used to teach at Whitworth University, in his book, his commentary on the book of Matthew, says this: by placing the Magi in his Christmas story, as he had the Gentile women in his genealogy, Matthew wishes to say that God surmounts racial and moral barriers to his saving work by calling to the Son those considered most unworthy. The Magi are walking illustrations of God's Catholic grace, God's universal grace. And then he quotes from Hosea, where God says, "I will show love to those who were called unloved, and to those who were called not my people, I will say, you are my people. And they will answer, you are our God." Something new has happened, and this story reminds us of that. Outsiders are in. And lastly, I would say that this story is one that has room for you in it. I think the power of a story and the truth of it is if there is room for the hearer to find themselves in the story. I remember when I was 6 years old in South Oceanside in our backyard, and I was discovering my vocal cords and started making sounds, and then I decided to see how loud I could scream, and I did. And my brother, who was 18, a freshman in junior college, came running out of the house, you know, "You okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, fine." So he went back in. And I never knew I had such power, you know, it was just great. And he was my hero, and so I loved the attention, you know. So 2 minutes later, I said, "Let's see if that works again." And, you know, I screamed again. Now came David running, and he wasn't always the most patient guy, but he seemed a little bit, you know, okay. And, you know, and "I'm okay." "Okay." He goes back inside. Well, you know, three's a charm. So 5 minutes later, I tried it again, you know, the trinity of manipulation. And he comes running out and he says, "I'm fine." He goes, "Come over here. Have you ever heard the story of the boy who cried wolf?" I said, "No, I never have." And he wasn't ticked off at all. He sat me down. I'll never forget this. He sat me right down on these steps. We were right outside the family room. It was where the laundry room was. It used to be an open space between the garage and the house, and my parents had just kind of connected it, and that's where the laundry stuff was. And sat me down on these steps, and he told me about this boy who was manipulating the townspeople and, you know, crying about the wolf. And then when the wolf really came, you guys know the story, and his everything was devoured. And I was just mesmerized. And he finished the story, and he went back inside. And that's all he said. I'll never forget it. You know, why? Because that story had room for me in it. And that is what Matthew is doing here. Luke does it with the shepherds. Matthew does it with the genealogy in the Magi. And he's saying, "Doug, this story has room for you in it." And he's saying to everyone who's here, all you Sunday school teachers, all you on the theological faculty, you know, and every one of you who for whatever reason finds yourself, whether it's of your own doing or just life experiences, you find yourself outside the manger scene. And Matthew is saying to you, there's room for you in Jesus' family. This is a story that has room for you in it, and you don't have to swing at every pitch. Here's a nice fat softball for you. I mean, everyone who is in this room, we know how cold it can be when you're an outsider. We each have a story. Whether it was in eighth grade or first day at university or first time we got fired, or when we failed in a relationship or a responsibility or a lot of us could just talk about it right now. And Matthew is saying, here's a softball for you. This is a story. It's a story that could be your story. There's room for you. You know, I was reading about Jürgen Moltmann this week, and I had not known this, but when he was captured by the British and taken to Great Britain, and you know, a lot of his friends, were the German prisoners that he got to know, they were so ashamed because the guards would put up on the walls pictures of Auschwitz and Buchenwald, all these Jewish death camps. You know, and here you think your culture is together, and your culture has just tanked. He was so ashamed of his country. And then he hears this story, totally grew up secular, and he hears this story about Jesus and this God who embraces him. I mean, he just felt like such an outsider. And he says, you know, it wasn't just that I found Jesus, but he says to this day, Jesus found me. And what do you do when that happens? Well, maybe you laugh, maybe you cry, but always you bow down and maybe you kiss the earth and you say, you are my God. And that's what the Magi do. They know. This is a story for them. Is it a story for you? Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east, and we have come to worship him.